Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Winter cults. Culture.
Billy Pelser has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job. A nice girl.
If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me?
I'd love to.
And loving parents who are about to give him...
You're going to like this. No, don't shake it. We're going to have to open it now. It won't wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it? No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. My dad gave it to me.
But there are a few things to keep in mind. If you expose it to the light, you may hurt it. If you get it wet, it will multiply.
All that from water? They got wet?
Yeah, plain water.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight. Because when they do, they change.
Rafe.
They become clever. Mischievous.
What's going on here?
And dangerous.
Gremlins, huh?
Little monsters.
Right.
Hundreds of them.
Well, I don't know, maybe thousands.
They've been here too. Billy, what are these things? Where do they come from?
Look, I know it sounds crazy, I know. But in a few hours, you're gonna have a major disaster on your hands.
Gremlins, directed by Joe Dante. They'll be expecting you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new Winter Cults and Culture. And here with me is Dan.
Hey, everybody.
And we're actually talking face to face, bottom to bottom.
For the first time.
Yes. Well, not ever.
Cheek to cheek.
Yeah. We have seen each other in the flesh more than once or twice. That sounds weird. I mean, and we today we're talking about the 1984 film Gremlins, family horror extravaganza. And we actually did a commentary track for that. So if you head on over, we'll put it up on our Patreon, patreon.com/newwinter, two W's. And we'll also set up a Bandcamp, which will be in the description, the notes for this, the show notes, where you can click on and you can buy it there and you can watch it at the same time as we're watching it. So it's like we're all watching it together, like one big happy family. I love Gremlins, and we both do. I think we kind of established that last night. And it's by Joe Dante. It's produced by Steven Spielberg. Chris Columbus wrote the story, and it stars Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates. Ooh. And it is, for people who don't know, basically there's this inventor guy who finds this, it goes to like Chinatown, basically finds this weird little creature called a Mogwai, comes with a set of rules, and basically within the first few hours they break all the rules. And he gives birth to other little gremlins who then basically become evil and take over the town and lay it to waste, and they have to be defeated. And that's basically the kind of premise for the film. Dan, one of your faves? A favourite Christmas movie, maybe?
Or possibly, one of them? Yeah. One that I remember watching at quite a young age, and I've watched it quite frequently over the years, probably once every 5 years or so. So I've seen it quite a few times. And I think, yeah, part of the enduring charm of it is the fact that it does touch all those bases that you mentioned in your intro. You know, it's got a little bit of horror, quite a lot of kind of like B-movie horror and sci-fi, which are referenced throughout the film in quite a nice sort of like nudge, nudge, wink, wink kind of way.
Yeah.
But it's also got that kind of like warm family film feeling. And a Christmas classic, because it's all taking place at Christmas. Sometimes people forget this is a Christmas movie, but I think aside from the fact it takes place at Christmas, it does have something of that kind of like nostalgic, warm kind of feeling that you'd expect from a Christmassy movie. And I think part of that is from the fact that there's constant references to a bygone era.
Yes.
Even though we think that this is, you know, it came out in 1984, we think it's set in the 80s because there's a few things that date it. But almost everything else about it looks like it's in the 50s and 60s. Everything from like posters that are up to the TV shows and films they're watching to like the attire people are wearing.
Yeah.
So that gives it an instant kind of nostalgic haze, I think, which in a way makes it timeless.
Yeah. Spielberg was apparently very vocal about the fact of trying to make it very family friendly. Even though he was obviously aware that it was had horror elements to it. And this and Temple of Doom, which is obviously Spielberg as well, basically made Spielberg ask for a PG-13 rating in the States anyway, which it came into being just because of these two films. So essentially being like, you can, I know, 13 is kind of okay, still kind of family-ish without it jumping straight from PG to like 15 or whatever it was at the time. So, so it kind of made history for that as well. And it's weird because at the same time, Ghostbusters, it was released on the same day as Ghostbusters. And
what a day.
Great day, which is also comedy with horror elements.
Yes.
So it's kind of the thing maybe at that time where a lot of that was happening. And yeah, and as you said, it does kind of hark back to like... you know, almost that Lynchian, like, American dream ideal kind of thing. And, yeah, all the kind of evil that runs beneath it. I think one of the... when I was reading up about it afterwards, and you were talking about it whilst we were watching it last night, the idea of, like, the greed of Western civilization versus the, like, the patience and the rules and the responsibilities and the history of, like, the Eastern culture and stuff like that. And that's why, like, the gremlins... I like eating and drinking lots and being idiots and like playing computer games whilst Gomez, Adam's family,
Gizmo
is playing like the trumpet and all this stuff. There's the idea that these are like modern, brash, young, arrogant fools that turn into monsters. So I think, I don't know if there's this like kind of almost coming of age, like dealing with teenagers and all this stuff element to it. Because they do a lot of the... well, there was, I didn't realize this until afterwards as well. A lot of people said it was racist because of the way the gremlins, what they were wearing, they were like breakdancing, listening to black music, I think, or something at one point I read, wherever all these, and what they, yeah, as I said, what they're wearing, that was like to do with African American culture. And it's almost seen as like the gremlins are black and they're evil.
That's a bit of a reach though, isn't it? I think, I mean, they don't actually exhibit enough personality, I think, for us to make sort of spurious claims like that. But I do think, you know, something in that kind of it's representing like a generational clash, maybe. Yeah, you've got this these two concepts underpinning the whole film then of like old, innocent, bygone Americana versus suddenly upheaved by the unruly, rebellious gremlins who are like, yeah, maybe like new cultural idioms coming in.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, this whole, and this ties into the Christmas theme, this thing of like crass greed, commercialization of Christmas versus the more kind of humble and responsible, cliched almost, like, yeah. Rules of like Eastern philosophy. And then there's loads of ways and characters that tie into that, like the dad who makes these crappy inventions and is interested in selling them. And,
yeah.
And even the way the film starts, you know, he thinks he can buy the Mogwai, and that's what causes all the trouble in the first place.
Yeah.
The great American dollar wins out in that discussion.
And that's why he throws at him in the end, take your money. Yeah. It's supposed to be for sale. Yeah, I'd be interested in like what was happening behind the scenes when he found out the Mogwai was gone, trying to get the grandkid to tell everybody if he sold it to the guy, trying to track down this guy, find out whatever happened to try and get a gizmo back.
Yeah, he's got a whole little story all to himself.
Yeah.
And it ends with him walking off into that really beautiful map painting.
Yeah.
Like an idealized,
yeah,
almost like Christmas. A Christmas card.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice. So, should we go into what actually happens in the plot?
Yeah.
A little bit. So it's quite, like, we were talking about this at the time. I'm going to keep saying that because we do recommend you listen to the commentary tracks. It's quite fun to do as well, actually. But it kind of starts off with him doing a voiceover. And as you said, that kind of added this element, this storybook / fairy tale element to it to begin with. And he's walking through Chinatown, and it's really cool. And one of the things I'll just touch upon here that happens throughout is the way that it's like, the way that it's lit basically is very, it's a lot of like reds and blues and greens. It's very like sci-fi, kind of 50s kind of sci-fi, 50s, like whatever, like sci-fi lighting, basically horror lighting. That's a kind of attached more to like the B-movie thing. It's not lit realistically or naturally or anything like that. It's these like deep funny colors, which is quite interesting, quite cool. And he uses a lot of like Dutch angles whereby you've kind of rotated the camera a little bit, so it's a little bit skew width, which, you know, JJ Abrams and all that loves to do. And yeah, it just feels like quite stylized and adds a bit of energy into the shots as well. There's a lot of dynamic shots, so it's not just like, you know, two shot and then close up. There's a lot of like, it punctuates the action really nicely. It's edited with some pace when it needs to be. And the shots are genuinely like subconsciously interesting, basically, as you're kind of watching it. One of the things that we were talking about is the fact that the gremlins are, you know, they kind of, as you said, they don't really show them for a while. But you kind of hear things and see things that are happening off camera. And then you see like the trail they've left or whatever, which is quite cool. So all those kind of shots are like really super interesting. And obviously it helps the puppetry team because they don't have to do so much and they're leaving stuff to your imagination. But yeah, it's got a really cool style to it, not only in the way that it's shot, but, and you know, not only directing the people and what happens in the scene, but yeah, just the way it's shot is really creative as well. And you'll see like the shots become more, start off very normal as it were, and then as it kind of goes on and everything gets a bit more hectic, the shooting style kind of reflects that.
To me, some of that lighting and that look really just reflects, you know, everyone on board is paying homage to some of those 50s sci-fi and 60s sci-fi and classic B-movie horror films. I think that's probably one way that you can kind of take this, is that you know, it has got elements of that, having fun with the gremlins and obviously the energy of all of that is part of the appeal.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, as I said, it begins, he's got this kind of VO about, you know, I can't remember what he's talking about, but it's just kind of setting up the scene basically.
Yeah, I can't remember what he said. It's very brief, actually. It's not even necessary. So there is a conscious decision, I think, to use that voiceover. Mm. I think more to frame this as a sort of modern day fairy tale.
Yeah,
and rather than actually give you any exposition.
Well, yeah, exactly true. And it's as he's walking around and from what he's wearing and stuff, it is like, that's what we're saying, the thing. It's like he's a private eye. It's like it's a film noir, like a pulp novel or something like that.
It actually looks like Chinatown, doesn't it?
Yeah, literally like Chinatown, the movie.
He's got that gumshoe kind of outfit to him.
And which makes, and I suppose that's kind of part of the joke, because he's kind of setting it up like that. And then when he finally like meets the old, it goes into the Chinese place, the Chinese shop, and he's showing off his like crappy invention about the travel kit, which has like just a disposable, disposable bathroom gear, like toothbrush and razor.
Bathroom buddy.
Yeah, the bathroom buddy, that's it. Attached to it, it make it kind of, because you're thinking he's like almost like he's a hardened detective to like, he's a bit of a numpty, yeah, basically.
Yeah, this is a really good like comedic moment already. And the way he just no-sells everything, that he gets no response from this guy. He just looks so unimpressed.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he finds basically the Mogwai, takes him out. And then as he walks out, he, in a very weird slow-mo, which isn't, it's a fake slow-mo where they've just duplicated the frames, which is why it looks so strange. Instead of filming at a rapid frame rate, which you then reduce. So you say you film it 50 frames a second. And then when you slow it down by half, it will look normal, even though it's going slower because you're still putting 25 frames rather than copying the frames over, which it looks like they've done here. It's a bit of a technical thing, which everyone could be able to figure out. So he talks about the rules. The rules being, one, I can't remember the order of them, but one, don't get them wet.
First one is
two bright lights. Light, yeah, that's right. So
number one is light.
Yeah, bright light.
And no keep direct out the light. Sunlight.
No direct sunlight, you're right. Two, don't get them wet. Three, and he says this is the most important one, though I don't understand why it would be more important or less than the others. Don't feed them after midnight.
Well, it's important because that is the...
Well, that's the catalyst, right? But it's like...
becoming a gremlin.
Sunlight, you're dead. So surely that might be the most important one. But the second one is like, with the water, that's when he gives birth. Pretty important, yes, gathered. But then the third one is when they turn into actual...
There's an escalation of severity for the human population, isn't there?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, okay, that's a good point. So those are the three rules which he's kind of come away with. And, yeah, so he goes
he reinterprets back. Them slightly, doesn't he, when he conveys them to his son.
Yeah, by the time he gets back. So then we go into, like, the town, and it's all lovely and snowy, and everything's like happy. We meet his old racist xenophobic neighbor who's all about buying American and all this stuff, and we joke about it, but that's just like the, I feel like that's,
he's meant to the be, norm, yeah, now, he's, really. He's your like meant to be everyday average American, and he's a World War II veteran, yeah, and played by Dick Miller,
yeah,
who again probably a conscious decision because he is a veteran of so many B-movies, like Roger Corman type films. Mm. And so anyone who's like aware of him will probably spot him and go, okay, this is what's great is that, you know, it's a mainstream family film with all these great references to like being a B-movie.
Yeah.
And it does like, handles both, that like line of being authentic and true to both camps, I think, really, really well.
Yeah. And, yeah, so Billy, who's our hero, he's basically trying to get to work, and he works at this bank where he hides his dog, which is really weird. I don't know why he has to bring his dog to work, especially when his mum's just sitting at home.
Yeah.
But he brings his dog to work, and yeah, he's running late, and there's that whole like, oh, ticking clock, oh, I'm late, I don't know. Like, and the whole key thing of this film is responsibility, and him learning how to be a responsible adult. So here he is with his job. Anyway, we get the evil woman, basically.
Mrs. Deagle,
well...
set up as an absolute pantomime villain of a bitch.
Yeah, and she's great. And the way that she talks sometimes when she's talking to Billy is kind of like verging on like flirty to like hateful. And it's like she starts every sentence flirty, like, oh, and then it goes like, because I'm evil. And yeah, it's quite interesting. And I love the way she kind of just walks in with this head of a snowman, which looks kind of murderous in its own horrible way. Like she's literally like the death of Christmas. She's kind of carrying it, even though the story is that the dog's done it, which is quite unlike poor old, what's his name?
Barney. Played here with great aplomb by Mushroom.
Mushroom, that's right. I've never heard of a dog called Mushroom before, by the way. So anyway, he's like, you know, oh, my dog. And she's basically saying, I'm going to kill your dog. Like, she goes, you can either give the dog in and they'll put it to sleep nicely, or if I get my hands on it, I'm going to do it slowly and painfully. And I believe that's the word she uses. So again, yeah. there's this, like, she's like a real horror. The fact that someone's saying that in a family film,
yeah,
I'm going to kill your dog slowly and painfully, like in a big Christmas thing. It's like, okay, so this is kind of what, but also at the same time, it's done with like a kind of comedy. Sally, and the dog comes out and knocks her over and is like,
oh, it's great,
that. Chewing on her arm. So yeah, it's all like, oh, which is quite funny. And then we get introduced to Judge Reynolds. Is it Judge Reynolds? Judge Reynolds, I can't remember his name.
Judge something. It's
Judge something. And who gets set up as like the foil almost, like the, you know, the kind of cocky, responsible one though, who's like, I'm going to make a fortune, I'm an adult and all this.
He's a sleazy kind of 80s ladder climber.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's the opposite to Billy.
Yeah, and you think he might be playing a bigger part. He doesn't. He's just in a couple of these scenes at the beginning and that's it, which is quite interesting. And the guy...
He gets brushed off in this scene in the bar.
Yes.
And that is basically his raison d'etre.
Yes.
To get brushed off by...
Yeah, what's his name?
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
And that's it. Thanks very much for coming.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. See you, Judge. But the guy who he talks to at the bar, who Billy talks to the bar, is actually Chuck Jones. Yeah, who did Bugs Bunny. That's the guy, apparently, who he's sitting at the actual bar with. It's
okay. Funny, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't recognise him. I wouldn't know what he looked like. No. So, like, nice little cameo for him, I suppose.
Yeah, nice little tidbit there.
And this film, actually, and especially the next film, Gremlins 2, I won't try to talk about that too much, but... They are packed with nice little touches and like cameos. Yeah. And
it's very meta, Gremlins too, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so even here, those little flourishes.
Yeah. And so we get to see a bit of the home life of Billy and his parents and whatever. And you see like all the crappy, it's a running joke of all the crappy inventions that his dad's made. And there's like the one where he's trying to make the eggs.
This is the best.
Juicer.
They're all amazing. They should have put some of these into production and tried to sell them as merchandise off the back of the film.
They're all kind of horrible. But, it's quite funny. It's a running joke just how like awful and broken they are.
Yeah, some good physical comedy here, isn't there? Like, yeah. Trying to fumble around with the eggs.
Exactly. A little bit of slapstick. And so we see the dad come back and we're introduced to Gizmo properly now. We see him and he's this cute little fluffy creature and everyone's like, oh, right, wow.
So cute.
And he gets... tells Billy the rules. It's like, you know, come on, you can't do this, you can't do that. So then takes him upstairs, plays a little bit of keyboard with it, and they get to like each other a bit more.
Just say one of those rules. So his interpretation of the water rule.
Yes.
And he's quite explicit with this.
Yes.
Don't give him anything to drink.
And don't give him a bath.
I mean, the damn thing's going to die if you don't give him any water to drink.
I mean, we were discussing this at the time. It's like, I don't really understand why, like, how he survives then. Like, don't feed him after midnight. Am I supposed to feed him anything? And also, obviously, there's a thing of like, well, it's midnight. It's after midnight everywhere. So, and like, when can you? Right, you can't do it after midnight. Can you say like between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m. you can't feed him, which would make more sense. Or just say till the sun comes up or something. Might just give it a bit more...
These are the perennial questions that Gremlins fans have been asking themselves for over 35 years.
Yeah, it's true.
Again, but that is like the fairy tale nature of it. It's like if you scrutinise these rules, it don't make sense.
Yes.
So
within literally, what, an hour or something, I imagine, of Billy getting him, he shines a bright light on him and that little Gizmo falls in a bin. And his head has to be bandaged up.
So sad. His little sad face.
Yeah. So immediately Billy's like just not looking, like not really looking after him properly already, which is really annoying. And then we get a little introduction to Corey Feldman, who plays his mate here. And this whole situation's weird because they go up to his bedroom and Billy takes his shirt off whilst Corey Feldman's there. And I think apparently originally Billy was going to be younger and then he's not. But they kept Corey Feldman the same. So his best friend, basically, in the whole world is a kid who's like 8 years old. He's like 21 or something. You might notice things in his bedroom, like he's got the Twilight Zone movie poster in there, which obviously Spielberg did. Spielberg makes a cameo later on, as does the composer, who I'll go into in a bit. So Feldman comes up and basically spills, he's got his like... pot with paintbrushes in and accidentally pours the water onto Gizmo. So that's the next morning, the next day. So literally within 12 hours, sunlight and water, basically. Well, not sunlight, light, bright light and water.
And this is horrific, this scene. This is really, really unpleasant, because if you haven't seen the film before, you don't know what the result of breaking these rules is. You just assume that he's going to die. It's really horrible. And the effects are brilliant. But he's in real, like, the Gizmo puppet is so characterful and expressive. So here, he's really in pain. It's really horrible. And his back's all bubbling. And these things are popping off of him.
Yeah. It's quite, you know, it's quite a cute way of giving birth compared to, like, how animals do normally. But yeah, he basically, these little little fluff balls like pop out of his back again, and it looks really painful for poor old Gizmo. And then he gives birth to basically however many it is, like 6 or 7 other little gremlins who are a bit more evil. And this is kind of what we were talking about, like what makes Gizmo good and the rest of them evil? Like what's the kind of law behind it? What's the theory that literally every single thing he gives birth to is mainly evil?
Yeah, and they've got this self-awareness. They actively want to eat after midnight and become gremlins.
Yes.
And it also makes me wonder, because he knows, doesn't he, Gizmo? He seems so sad.
Yeah.
And you wonder, how many times has this happened before?
Yeah, in his life, yeah. It's true.
What's Gizmo's backstory?
Poor old Gizmo. Well, at this point, Billy takes one of the creatures to... Well, we were like, is he a doctor in some kind of lab, research lab or something? No. But he's just high school. He's just a fucking high school teacher or something.
Yeah.
But he takes him in and the guy's like, oh, I'm going to do some tests on this.
Nasty guy.
Yeah. And he's kind of not really being, what's weird is that, you know, when he's like drawing blood from him or whatever and all this stuff, is he does it like he's super excited about doing these animal tests.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what makes him, so he's not necessarily like he's evil.
But he's not ethical.
Yeah, exactly. And that comes like, up. Why is he getting a kickback off it?
So Gremlins 2, we get even more of this, of these guys being portrayed as just like irresponsible, like Frankensteins almost.
Yeah.
Wanting to tamper around with these innocent animals.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's really satisfying when he gets his just desserts.
Yeah. And then we get the explanation of Gremlins from, what's his name again?
Dick Miller. I can't remember what his character's called.
But he's like, oh, there were gremlins in the machines in the war times, because that's where the term gremlins really comes from, apparently. And yeah, so we kind of get a little bit of that. And that's when later on, when he's going, there's gremlins. Yeah, he kind of justifies why the film is called Gremlins. But yeah, we see a little bit of like Billy and Phoebe Cates kind of getting on and getting a bit closer. And this is where she starts talking about how it's the most suicidal time of the year, Christmas or whatever, and she's totally not big on Christmas. She hates it. She gets really uptight and funny.
Some people have a nice Christmas, but some people are opening up their wrists.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, fuck, really fucking dark for a Christmas movie. And just out of nowhere as well, which is a bit weird.
Yeah, it doesn't mesh with the tone of the film or her character at this point. And it's really, you feel shoehorned in and just weird.
And it kind of is to preempt you into what happens a bit later, which is fair enough, but... That I'll kind of go into that scene when it comes up, but I kind of understand that this is just pure, like, she's just being a fucking downer. And all right, later on in hindsight, it's like, this is where it's coming from. But this is, because later on it's kind of done as like, it's almost a bit goofy, like comical, like black humor, the way it's black comedy where he's dead. But the fact he's got stuck up a chimney at Santa with Christmas presents is a little bit goofy and funny in itself, even though it's quite dark. This is just pure dark. This is like, there's no goofiness in it. She's saying people kill themselves at Christmas. Yeah. There's not like a funny situation or story or anything that could be interpreted as funny.
I mean, what's it doing here? Does someone just really want to get that message?
Yeah.
The national suicide statistics, we've got to get them in here.
Yeah.
And then Billy's just like, that's a bit sad. Never thought of that. Anyway, do you want to go on a date?
Yeah. Yeah. Like not thinking that she's some psycho, which is how she was kind of coming off as. So they're like all getting set up and they're really excited. The doctor's drawing blood from this other little gizmo looking guy. They're watching, what are they watching here? They're watching like another, again, there's like whatever they're watching on TV is kind of referencing what's happening, what what's about to happen in the film. So that Invasion of the Body Snatchers is on it.
With
it starts with It's a Wonderful Life, which obviously is a Christmassy film.
Yeah.
And then you've got like whatever the Clark Gable
Casablanca.
It wasn't, I don't think it was Casablanca, but it was whatever it was, but it's like a romantic scene. And then that was around the Phoebe Cates thing. And now he's watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where it's like, oh, the horror and everyone's been taken, town's been taken over.
And people are going to burst out pods.
Pods, yeah, exactly. The pods.
Probably the most important film that they watch. I don't even know what film it is, but it's that Stock Racer. Stock Car Racer.
Yeah.
Which obviously plays into the final scene.
Yeah, the end bit. And that's Gizmo watching it, kind of getting excited by all the cars. So yeah, they're like painting and stuff. And then he looks at his clock because the other naughty gremlins are hungry. Gizmo isn't hungry, but yeah. And so he goes and gets some fried chicken. Again, this was a reference to like a black stereotype because he's giving him fried chicken. I'm just saying that's what I read. I'm not saying it's a thing. It's just one of the opinions that people have about it. Gives him the fried chicken. They realize it's after midnight. So he wakes up and they're in these really cool, like alien looking pods, which look all like wet and slimy, and they're like almost like spider eggs, and they're kind of like webbed against like the side of the bed. That, you know, like something standalone,
something straight out of H.R. Giger.
Yeah, exactly.
They look so cool, and this is one of the things that impressed me as a kid. I think because you do get these scenes that are actually quite grisly and disgusting, and they do at the right times they do ramp this film up into being horrific.
Yeah. And the next, from here on out, it does get quite horror-y. So he's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. His mum comes up and she's like, what the hell are these cool things? But they look like, they look like the gremlins, like kind of crouched. As you said, you can kind of see his spine. They look like they're kind of crouched and hunched over. He's like, oh my God, someone bit through my clock. So as you said, they've got some... they want to be fed after midnight. They want to become these gremlins, yeah. And so they chew the wire. That was how they managed to make him think that it was earlier than when it was. He goes to see the one that he goes to the doctor, who's in a cage. So the pod's in the cage and it's all disgusting. Corey Feldman is there again, and being like his best mate, and that's still a bit weird. So now here comes a really cool... This is probably one of my favourite, if not my favourite scene in the thing, which is the mum, randomly... he's talking to the dad, so we now know the dad's out of town. He's at this convention or whatever, and that's where you see Spielberg running around on a bike. So she's at home by herself, basically. You get that's not the scene. The scene I'm talking about is coming up, but yeah, then you get Billy with the evil old woman again, and there's a bit of I didn't really understand this bit. It was like I don't really understand, like, and there's a B plot that's happening, which I'll go into a bit later, which there were some deleted scenes, but I'm not really sure what the point of that scene was, just that the evil woman is still evil. And there was the mum that you saw earlier who was trying to get money for her kids to eat or something weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you're about to reference in terms of deleted scenes, but I just felt that was all working towards building up her character.
Yeah.
So you get...
I think it's a reminder, right?
The point of building her. Yeah, and the point of her character is basically for the payoff of her being killed.
Killed, yeah.
which is bloody satisfying.
Which is satisfying. So we come back to the school and the doctor's showing like some kind of film, and basically all the pods start hatching and it's really cool. There's loads of smoke. Poor Gizmo's hiding. And it's all like really wet and disgusting again still. And the doctor's like... get out of here. And then in the background, you're seeing like they're watching like basically like someone working on a pig heart or whatever it is. And so you've kind of got like a real life body horror thing kind of going on in the background. And it's all like wet and slimy, and there's like, it's all like pulsating, kind of like the pods that you're seeing at the same time. So the doctor comes and has a look, and he's like, oh, you know, what the hell's going on here? Billy comes in and finds the doctor with a needle in his bum, which is referencing the fact that obviously he took blood from earlier. Yeah. And then we were talking about this at the time. I'm not sure if it's like he's supposed to have been like sedated, which I don't think he is, or he's been killed, because you don't see him ever again. So I think the idea is that he's dead, like the Gremlins actually killed him. And because you're not actually seeing it, still makes it like, you're still your kid head, as you said, you didn't actually think he was...
Yeah, dead, it's really almost like good. An A-team kind of kill, where people are dispatched, but you don't see it happen.
Yeah.
And it's not quite confirmed.
Yeah.
So it's quite smart, really.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, in my mind, it works to suggest that these gremlins are dangerous and everyone's in, like, mortal danger.
Yeah, so it's a real threat here. And so you get quite a cool scene where he's kind of running around the school and, you know, he's trying to get away from the this evil gremlin thing that he's just kind of, you're just catching glimpses of and you're not quite seeing it properly yet, which is quite cool. And then, yeah, you've got a cool bit where he runs into to get his hand fixed because it scratched his hand. And then it, like, pops out and attacks him, whatever, and runs away.
So now we know what the mother is going to be dealing with.
Yeah, by herself. So we've seen her by herself.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Them attack someone, possibly kill them. Had little glimpses of it. It's attacked Billy. And there's four of them.
Yeah.
Five of them in the house.
Yes.
With the mother.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And it's quite cool because as well, at the same time, that whole school thing, it's a bit like a slasher, prom night or something like that thing. So, yeah, this is what I was talking about, my favourite scene. So the mum's like, oh, I wonder what's going on. She comes up, but they've cut like the phone lines and stuff, which is all pretty cool. She sees the things open up and she's like, oh my God, there's music coming from downstairs. She goes into the kitchen and this is basically where she's like, action mum. And she grabs a knife and she's not afraid to fucking use it.
And we get our first full proper view of a gremlin and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Sitting
really
there eating.
Horribly evil.
Eating the cookies.
Yeah. Really horribly evil and literally like devil spawn.
They did a great job designing the Mogwai and gremlins.
Yeah.
And making them. All of that is just incredible to me.
Yeah, they look great.
And can you imagine them making a film like this now?
Yeah,
they'd bodge it.
Yeah, they would bodge it because it would all be CG. And these look so cool how they are. So, yeah, she kind of comes in and as he's looking into like a food mixer and she turns it on and literally blends this gremlin in what is a really horrible,
so grisly,
disgusting scene. And luckily it's like green blood. So it kind of makes it, again, a bit, you know, if it was red blood, I think people might have a bit more...
Be more horrific.
Yeah, a bit more of a problem to it.
It makes it a bit more cartoony.
Yeah, exactly. And so the other one that's throwing plates, and she's just holding up a table to kind of stop herself. She, like, goes full in, like, I'm going to stab this thing to death, look. And
yeah, this is brutal.
Yeah, it's really brutal. So she literally, like, proper big horror film...
Kitchen knife.
Like, right above your head. And she's like getting, you know, she's got like the chills afterwards. But then there's like another one which she puts in the microwave, sets it on, and the thing like just kind of explodes / melts.
Spectacular. One of the most spectacular deaths in any kind of like monster film I can think of.
Yeah, it's great. And anyway, by this time, Billy's come back and you see, was it Stripe? Stripe, who's like the kind of head evil gremlin, basically, and you'll know because he's got a Mohican. And they're able, oh, they kill another one by cutting his head with the sword to put into the fire.
So she goes to the fireplace and something's moving in the stocking. And she goes to cut it. And actually, the toy robot falls out. That's what's been moving in there.
Yeah.
And at that point, he pounces because he's hiding in the Christmas tree.
Yeah. And he's choking her, yeah, with the lights. Yeah.
Well, no, you assume it's him choking her. And that's quite brutal. And Billy comes in, takes a sword off the wall, whacks its head off. And the head goes in the fire. And again, a really great kind of like death scene.
Yeah.
But actually, they look up and Stripe is still there.
Still there, yeah.
He's on the windowsill. And he gets out, and that is like the beginning of the kind of next stage of the storytelling of like, okay, we've had them invade the domestic space, but now one's got out. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
We know that the Mogwai can spawn.
Yeah.
Maybe the Gremlin can as well.
Yeah. And there is a thing where it's like they are surrounded in snow, which is essentially water, frozen water, surrounded by them. But, you know, yeah, we don't talk about that. So, yeah, so basically Billy, for some reason, kind of goes to the YMCA where I guess he's following the tracks.
Well, it's fun to stay.
Yeah, exactly. Kingston Falls. And, he goes in, basically goes into the swimming pool, sees, like, so I keep going to call him Spike. Stripe has fallen in, and there's this cool bit where, like, the water's bubbling and there's loads of smoke. Like, they've gone really crazy on the smoke machine here. And the water's going green and bubbling and all this stuff. And basically, Stripe has given birth to like tons of gremlins. So Billy goes to the police and he's like, you got to help. And you would probably notice one of the coppers is Mike from Breaking Bad and, or, you know, whatever, Better Call Saul, you know, all that, which he's most well known for these days. And they're like, oh, you know, whatever, kid. You know, we don't really care. We're just small town cops.
It's another sort of sci-fi movie trope.
Yeah.
The bumbling cops. And I think it's actually a direct reference to a scene that happens in Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, probably.
Where he's trying to tell them, for God's sake, they're coming!
Yeah. You don't understand.
And they're like, get this Looney Tunes out of here.
Yeah, yeah, right, kid. And you see the stop motion, all the gremlins turning up in this weird little stop motion miniature. And then you see Dick Miller and his wife. His wife's like really happy and sweet and lovely and everything's like twee and great. And yeah, and then he's just like, oh, whatever, you know, fuck this bitch kind of thing. and he goes and he sees his, like, truck thing basically starts up and basically bulldozes its way into the house.
And that's
and
it.
And it, like, looks, you're not even
it
sure.
It cuts.
Yeah, it cuts.
Do we see them again?
I don't think we do. I mean, I know he's in Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
But
I think in this film, that's it.
Yeah, he probably might have died in this film because it's literally that if they bulldoze in and then they're trapped in the corner of the house and you just see the close-up of it.
Ah.
Like attacking them.
I think that's it for them in this film. So the suggestion is they're dead. Although, yeah, we know better.
Yeah, but before the sequel, yeah, I imagine you think they're dead.
I spent 6 long years thinking he was dead.
Yeah. Well, that's all you were worried about if he died.
Couldn't sleep at night for 6 years.
Isn't he? and then we see, like, and then there's all these, like, little funny comical moments, like a bit slapstick, where it's like the guy posting the letters in the letterbox and it's just spitting it back out and he doesn't really understand why that's happening. The cops start getting calls about something going on in the town. So they're like, oh, fine, we'll go figure it out. And they go in and this is the cool bit where you see Mrs. Deagle.
Yeah.
And she's on a Stairmaster, but like wigs off and she's just like some frail old cat woman, basically. And, you know, the kind of monster that's been walking around is... you know, she can't, like...
The curtain's been drawn back.
Yeah, exactly. And you see she's just like this little old lady, really.
But she's still sour.
She's still
and miserable.
A dick. Yeah, still an absolute dick. And, basically...
She gets the doorbell and the carol singers and she goes to, like, throw water on them or something.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's the gremlins.
Yeah, the gremlins are singing carols. Again, it's goofy, it's stupid, it's silly. And, like, the fact that even, like, the gremlins would know, like... to do stuff like this. Like guys, okay, get your hats on, get some music sheets. I mean, maybe the inference is that they've killed the carol singers who were there
and
taken their stuff and it's just continuing what they're doing for a laugh.
It's funny, like, because we've had them established as, like, really sadistic killers and now it's like, let's have fun with them.
Yeah.
And actually make them a bit wacky.
Yeah. and it works. And so, the poor old woman, Mrs. Deagle, gets on a stair lift. She's like, oh, my heart, my medication, or whatever. And then she gets thrown. she gets it like does this high speed cut where she gets thrown outside the fucking top of her house. She's dead.
And it's basically brilliant. Like the velocity with which she comes out of the
really
top of her house.
It's a really good shot.
And then you get to see her comically, just like on her back, you see her feet like in the snow.
Yeah, a bit like you know, Wizard of Oz or something.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Ruby slippers kind of sticking up, the Wicked Witch of the East or whatever it would have been.
And it's great because she's just been painted as such a horrible character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, the gremlins are laughing, the cops see it happen, yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, fuck this, like some shit's happening. So meanwhile, the dad, the dad's trying to get home and he's like, just, you know, there's all these kind of funny scenes with him.
More of his wacky inventions.
Exactly, trying to be like the traveling salesman almost and selling his wares. And then we get like quite a long scene in the bar where poor Phoebe Cates is still working. She's not even bothered to like leave, or they're trapped in there or whatever. And she's basically getting everyone drinks and trying to like sort them out. And they're drinking loads and they're smoking and they're basically being rambunctious. Is that the word? And obnoxious.
This is probably one of my favourite scenes.
It's really good puppet work.
Yeah, this is where they seem to be going to town now. They're like, let's use the gremlins and show as much personality with them as we can. Let's really spotlight how good the puppetry is and just have them. I mean, it must have been so much fun in coming up with the different variations here on the characters and like giving them things to do. Because you've got them like this, like flashing, and drinking all the beer, playing cards, gambling, fighting with each other.
Yeah,
it's just really good fun.
Yeah, and just it's just quite a cool visual effect scene. They're playing Star Wars, the video game, I believe, as well. And yeah, you kind of see Stripe being in charge still. And anyway, basically Phoebe Cates makes a runaway for it. She gets in the car. Billy's there. They've kind of timed that right. And then they go to the bank. And I'm not really sure why they're at the bank. Still don't really know why they go there.
No.
But then this is where Phoebe has her scene where she talks about how her dad disappeared at Christmas and he was found up the chimney dressed as Santa Claus with all the presents. He'd fallen and broke his neck or something.
Yeah.
And he was dead. Now, apparently Spielberg and the studios wanted Joe Dante to cut this bit out because they were like, it's way too dark. Dante was like, no. He fought to keep it in. And his main reason, apparently, was that it tonally fits the film in the sense of it's the representation of the, and this is what I said before, of the horror element to it. Your dad's dead at Christmas, falling down a fucking chimney dressed as Santa. And also the kind of goofiness of that death. It's ridiculous. And it's the thing is, it's played so super straight that it comes off as like, I don't know how else you can play it. That sounds like I'm being detrimental to what she's trying to do. But it kind of doesn't really work. And I can kind of see why he's put it in. And it's maybe to give the character a bit more depth, as you were saying at the time. And maybe it is just a bit, you know, but it's like we're having this like really fun, raucous time. And yeah, there's a horror element to it, but there's no like emotional, like really deep emotional thing going on. And you don't really want there, it doesn't need it in this film. You're not really asking for it. It's a very simple fairy tale kind of thing. And this just comes out of left field and nothing is, you know, what is it there for? What purpose does it serve?
Well, exactly. I mean, it almost feels like it's being inserted to play into something that's going to happen at the end, which it never does.
Yeah.
Whatever the intention with this was, I don't think it works.
No, it's a really strange thing. And people still have a problem with it to this day, but Joe Dante stands by it and basically it's his film, so whatever. That's what he wants to do. So anyway, we see like the dad is now slowly getting home. They're walking around the city and it's just basically, that's one of the things I was saying as well, is it's basically like deserted. At a local cinema is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Fantastic, great choice of film for them to be watching.
Yeah, for them to be watching the first Disney film. And again, as you were saying at the time, it's all like, you know, innocence and like, it's literally pure childhood fantasy kind of thing. And it's pretty cool, this bit. So when they go in, there's the great scene of them all in the cinema watching the film and everyone's going mad. Apparently, they got every single member of crew to do something for that shot, so that it, you know, looked the way it does.
Everyone's waving at Gremlin.
Yeah, basically. And again, you'll notice like the deep reds, all the angles are skew with, like I was saying before. And yeah, it's all cool. And all these Gremlins have kind of got their own little characters. I mean, why they've congregated there anyway is just fucking weird. And why is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs such a, like, why have they chosen?
I can't think of a more perfect film. It's iconic. It is like so innocent. And you get obviously Hi Ho, which,
yeah,
you know, we get this great sing along with the Gremlins. And it's just like, perfect, I think, for as a bit of a gag, really.
Yeah, and they seem to be really enjoying it. There's also a weird element here where they've gone from being like murderous monsters to now it just sounds like they just want to have a laugh.
Yeah,
I was just trying to enjoy myself. I was like, fucking hell.
The other thing is like it's Disney, and I think part of like tying into some of the theme of the film is like the way like Gizmo is kind of seduced by like modern culture.
Yeah.
And the Gremlins like it as well. You know, you see them playing video games in the bar and everything. And it's like, it's just like emblematic of like American mainstream culture.
Yeah.
So they gravitate towards it.
True. Yeah. And then this is kind of the thing we're saying as well, where it's weird how, like in maybe other films, it would be more like, we've got to like help them see what they're doing or whatever. But no, they're out and out. Like, we need to murder every single one of these monsters. And they basically blow up the cinema, essentially, with them, with all of them inside.
Good plan.
Apart from Stripe.
Oh.
It's also the element of, like, you know, they're in a cinema watching it, and they're like, there's that shot where they're tearing through the screen, and obviously people would be watching this at the cinema.
Yeah, would be cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen this at the cinema?
No, I don't think so.
I might go and watch it sometime. They often show it at the Prince Charles.
Oh, really?
Once a year or something.
Yeah, why not? Well, yeah, they blow it up, and like Gizmo's kind of like there as well. Like, you know, being a bit more of a nuisance, really, more than anything. Until the end. So then there's this weird bit where, Billy goes in, he's after Stripe, and then it's, again, this is like the horror element coming back in. You know, he's got a baseball bat, he's ready to like basically kill Stripe, but Stripe's kind of playing all these tricks on him and like luring him deeper and deeper into the cave of, as it were, of this modern electric department store. Yeah. So meanwhile Phoebe Cates is like trying to figure out how to do like the lights, and there's the fountain
I think she does it, doesn't she? She accidentally, in trying to turn on the lights, turns on the
fountain. Right.
Then you're like, disaster.
Yeah, that means he's got a source now, even though what he has to do really is turn on the tap and he'll be fine. But so Billy's trying to go around, and then basically he gets defeated by one of those tennis ball things that shoot tennis balls at you. But he's like carrying like he's been shot. Like by a shotgun. Yeah,
well, because he's just had these like really nasty looking circular swords thrown at him, and you're like, Christ, right. This is getting serious.
Yeah.
And then he starts firing just balls at him, and that's enough to like knock him on his.
Yeah, instead of just getting out the way, he's just like crumbling into like a ball, like a little pussy boy. And then basically Stripe bloody turns up with a chainsaw, and this is quite cool because it's apparently a homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Which is by Toby Hooper, who just did a film with Spielberg at that time, where there was a lot of problems with, which was...
Invaders from Mars?
Poltergeist.
Oh.
where Spielberg wanted to make Poltergeist, but he was too busy making E.T., so he used to flip. When he was finished on E.T., he would go and stick his oar in at Poltergeist and got under Toby Hooper's skin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there was the whole thing, and that's why in Poltergeist, what originally, Toby Hooper, like Steven Spielberg's name was huge.
Yeah.
And Toby Hooper's name was tiny. And Toby was like, you've made it look like it's a Steven Spielberg film when I've actually directed it. But apparently on the set, there was differing things. The crew was saying that Steven Spielberg was just sticking his oar in and he actually directed it, not Toby Hooper. A lot of people were just like, Toby Hooper stuck up to his guns. But after a while, he was just like, whatever, like, I can't be bothered. Basically, Spielberg wants to make his film, like, why choose me kind of thing. He got really annoyed. Yeah. But one of the things, and now it's a thing to do with the unions or whatever and all this stuff, is you can't have a producer's name bigger than the director's name in the credits. Anyway, it's interesting. So now we see Gizmo's coming to the rescue, and he's in his car driving around like he was, like, yeah, as you said, referencing
you get a little echo as well, just to make sure you
hear it. There's a little audio cue. Like the chain, he's really going at him with the chainsaw. He goes into the fountain, Stripe, and he starts bubbling and he's like, oh no, what are we going to do?
He's literally got his finger stuck in it. Like
And then like all these things start bubbling
back.
Gizmo comes to the rescue and basically opens up the window, basically the blind. And apparently there was an additional bit where Billy opened up another one. Then Spielberg came in and said, no, just Gizmo. Gizmo's the hero. So Billy was
nice.
So got cut out.
Wow.
So it was just Gizmo that opened it up. And then you have this really cool shot where Stripe is basically melting into the skeleton. It's like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever. His face is melting when they look at the Ark. And it looks horrible. Like his eyes go all white and like it looks like it's going to explode. It's all this yellow gunk everywhere. It's
liquidizing, isn't it?
Yeah, literally. It's really disgusting. And then the dad just pops in. He seems like pretty cool with it. He's back now, by the way. He got back. He was, he's just walked in whilst there's this horrific, like, death happening in front of them. But none of them seem that bothered. Like, I know the idea is that they're not, this is all done on a different day or whatever, but they look like they're not like disgusted or anything by it. They're just like, it's almost like it's completely normal. Gizmo has saved the day. Billy comes in and I love the bit where it's like the skeleton jumps out. It's like one final Carrie style, like gasp. And then falls onto the floor and the skeleton melts into this like heaving goo. So he's completely disintegrated now. And that's basically the end of that. And they're like looking after Gizmo and the Chinese guy comes back and he's like, you guys aren't ready. You can't deal with this shit. I'm taking it back. Here's your money, you suckers, you American scum. Look what you did. You don't understand what you're doing. Apparently he's like 80 years old and he's dead now, obviously, but at that time looked amazing. And they were saying they really had to make him look older because actually underneath all the makeup and stuff, he's actually got really youthful, like, great skin. He doesn't actually like look particularly like really old.
I'm surprised he's old.
Yeah. And so that's kind of it. So the Chinese guy is just like, they have that little message, as you were saying before, where it's like,
he gives the dad a telling off and basically says, Americans aren't ready for this kind of responsibility.
Yeah.
But he, Gizmo wants to give a special message to Billy.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, but you, Billy, one day you might be ready.
Because he's shown
something, hasn't he? He's shown he can step up and take responsibility.
Yep. And then we get that bam, 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 which is the great music.
Great music. Jerry Goldsmith. Not Danny Elfman, as I said.
Not Danny Elfman.
No. Jerry Goldsmith. Soundtracks to this album, it's film, which makes a great album.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. I just love the musical cues in this.
Yeah, it's really good. And you were talking about this special vinyl record of, let me talk about that.
Mondo, who do reissues of cult film soundtracks on kind of like deluxe vinyl editions, did Gremlins a few years ago. One disc is a kind of like Mogwai coloured, it's like marbled brown. And the other one's like gremlin coloured. It's like gunky green. And what's cool is it comes in this sleeve that is reactive to both sunlight and water, which I've never seen on any other record before. So when you take it into the sun, some sort of chemical reacts, and it's like a mostly white cover, but then all these other images come out. So basically I think the one that's sun reactive is like a picture of Gizmo, and then under the sun you get all these other Mogwai, and then the one, if you put water on it, then you see all these other gremlins appearing.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's really cool.
Really expensive as well.
Oh, really? I bet. For Zach Galligan's role of Billy, Judd Nelson and apparently Emilio Estevez auditioned for it.
I can imagine Emilio Estevez in that role.
Yeah, apparently Judd Nelson did it way too angry, which I can kind of imagine. He didn't have that kind of softer touch, which Billy kind of needed. And yeah, the budget was $11 million. It made over $150 million at box office. Success, that is. And in the original script, we were talking about this a bit last night, originally the dog was going to be eaten. They were going to have a scene at McDonald's where customers were being eaten. The mum's head was going to be cut off and thrown down the stairs. Gizmo was also supposed to be Stripe, but then Spielberg said, no, you need a good gremlin. So Gizmo just remained normal and Stripe became obviously another gremlin.
So
the original script was a lot more horrific. And
good decisions in my opinion, because it made it something really different. It's not, no other film quite like this. I imagine some of that, I mean, keeping Gizmo as a very nice, fluffy, very marketable kind of creature, especially after E.T. Imagine he must have that in the back of his mind as well.
Yeah. And there was the, you know, when we were watching it, there was a reference to Boy's Life and like Space Something, which was a reference to, which is to make Spielberg happy, apparently, like E.T. and Close Encounters references. Apparently, Howie Mandel did the Gizmo voice, who you wouldn't have heard of here, I don't think, but he didn't do the Gizmo singing, just the Gizmo voice. And apparently he presents, I want to say like the American Deal or No Deal, but apparently he's been in stuff. He's like known for in America for doing things.
Mark Wahl.
Yeah.
Who did the singing?
I don't know. Didn't say. Couldn't find that. It's actually really good.
Thanks.
So some of the alternate and deleted scenes, they had an opening where the dad was in Chinatown, but was talking to another shopkeeper. And he says, and he goes, oh, I just want something like unique. And he keeps bringing him stuff out. And he's like, no, not that. Like, it's kind of stupid stuff. He's like, oh, I want to find like, you know, some kind of gizmo, hence where the name Gizmo comes from. So it gets referenced there. And then the little kid is like, hey, you should come to my grandfather's shop. He's got some cool stuff there. And he's like, oh, okay, kid, show me. So they just cut that entire bit. So it's just, he's just following some kid into a shop.
Yeah, it sounds like a fairly innocuous, unnecessary scene.
Yeah.
One of the things we said like, we like about this is like the tight.
Yeah, it's very tight.
Very pacey.
Yeah. And that scene isn't needed, but it, I suppose it does give some context to why you don't really need to know, again, why he's called Gizmo. Because you just think, well, he's an inventor. That's kind of like a term used as for a gadget or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, another one was Billy getting chastised for being late at the beginning. So you kind of get a bit more of his work life. You see a bit more of Judge and the boss as well, the bank boss. And then there's another bit where Billy's in his room making a Troll Warrior comic. And if you notice, he has a Mad Max Road Warrior thing. And so it's kind of referencing maybe that a little bit, but also it gives a sense of like he's got like a project that he's trying to, he's got personal, he's not just like drawing, he's got like a personal vision or whatever, some actual thing that he's trying to do. And they talk about it, but it's not like that you don't see it properly.
It's discarded quite quickly, that aspect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Again, that's made more of in the next film.
Sequel, yeah. There's another bit with Billy dropping off the Christmas cards into that postbox with that same guy who's there.
Oh, right.
Again, so it's just kind of setting up the postbox thing really a bit later. It's not really adding anything. It's just having a little convo, but yeah. And then the big one is that there's a scene showing like Phoebe and Billy get a map out of the town, and you see how Mrs. Deagle is planning to get houses to be like foreclosed or whatever. And she's going to sell off the land to like a chemical factory. So it's a whole subplot about how evil she is. And I think it's right in cutting it in that it's completely not necessary. Like, it doesn't really go anywhere. It's kind of, it distracts from the focus of the film, and you already got a sense that she's like evil anyway. Like, why build her into like, and also it's like you've got Judge as well, so it's like you don't need to have all these like bad people or whatever enemies in it.
Yeah, they've done enough to establish her as like an Ebenezer Scrooge, and she gets her nice downfall.
Yeah, exactly.
Are these scenes available anywhere? Because
you can watch them on YouTube, I think.
Still. Really?
Yeah.
I have DVDs the digital versatile disc.
Yes. And well, it'll be on. It should be on. They're not on it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you'll be able to see them on YouTube. Yeah. Sure. I might put them in the show notes actually, so people can just watch them. But they're not. There's only like 10 minutes or something. And that's it. That's Gremlins. I think we've got anything else to say about it? Have you?
One thing I thought was interesting was always like the cover art for the videos and the posters and things. Because I remember, I think, well, it feels like first time I saw it in the video shop, it's got the image of like Billy's hands holding the box. And then it's almost like the gremlin is ripping through the video box.
Yeah.
And I think it says, "They're back." So I think maybe that was like, they tried to reissue or repush it. Because the really original like posters and things are just that image of Billy holding the box. And there's this cute pair of hands and the eyes.
That. Yeah. Cute, clever, mischievous, intelligent, dangerous. What's the thingy quote that's here?
Yeah. So then later on, and you'll see variations, you've got the gremlin ripping through that image.
Yeah, and it's crossed it off and gone, "We're here."
Oh, not "They're back." Yeah, "We're here."
So it must have just been a alternative, maybe. Or maybe it was released at a later...
Maybe it was a marketing thing for like the VHS or something like that.
Maybe when the film was actually released.
But I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah.
Because you don't get that many... again, it's like part of its self-referential nature where they keep making references to things. You know, like the gremlins coming through the screen.
Yeah.
Things like that. I just thought that was a cool part of the marketing.
Yeah, it is cool. And yeah, it's Stripe as well. It's good. Great film. Great Christmas film as well. So it's, hopefully you should set the mood for everyone to, you know, have a good, nice Christmassy film.
Christmassy film. Watch along with A New Winter.
you can do it. So you watch with me and Dan. And yeah, sign up to Patreon, www.patreon.com/anewwinter, 2 W's, ANEWWINTER. Type it in, press enter, go, sign up. It's all on there. And there's exclusive episodes, and I'm putting some more stuff up there as well. So take a look. You can email us, newwinterpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, @anewwinter, Twitter, @anewwinter. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Dan, where can people find you?
If they're interested in music, you can find me at Dreadful Discs on Instagram and YouTube.
The YouTubes. Thanks, guys. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. See ya.
Bye.
And you're winter cults.
Culture.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.